Welcome in to Light the Lamp. I'm your host, Alexis Downey. It's a special week here at the Anaheim Ducks as we get ready to celebrate our Women in Sports weekend this weekend. And a big part of that this year is Hockey Hall of Famer, gold medalist, and CEO of Sports Innovation Lab, Angela Ruggiero. Angela is joining us today on DuckStream. Thank you so much for taking the time. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. Fun to be here.
Thanks for being a part of this. And I want to start by just talking about the upcoming weekend. You're, of course, a part of our panel on Friday before the Ducks game and joined by a lot of other inspirational women as a part of that. But then Saturday, you're going to have a hockey clinic. So do you want to just talk a little bit about your role with the clinic on Saturday and maybe what some people can expect?
Yeah, I'm excited. I love coming in, and typically it's to young girls to inspire them to pick up, you know, a hockey stick, or if they're already playing, to, you know, give them a tip here and there, inspire them a little, maybe show my medals. The clinic though is for women, which is really exciting. I think, the concept I love that, you know, it doesn't matter what age you are, you can pick up hockey. And I always brag to hockey is one of those sports you can play, you know, till you're 80. It's technically non-impact because your knees, you know, you're not pounding the pavement like you do in a running sport. But yeah, I'm really excited to help out in that clinic and, you know, show a couple drills and just have some fun on the ice. At the end of the day, hockey's fun. So have some fun with ladies that are looking to, you know, play or already do play the game.
Are you skating a lot still yourself?
So, yes and no. I don't, okay. I retired back in 2011, mm-hmm. but I played in the Hockey Hall of Fame game this past November. It's, you know, and they invite us back every once in a while. And so I had to start training a little so I wouldn't pull a hamstring.
Yeah.
I try to skate every once in a while. There's I went to Harvard undergrad. There's like a Harvard alumni skate here outside of Boston that I skate in once in a while. But but other than that, I have kids. It's impossible to get on the ice mm-hmm. too often. I'm a coach now.
I was going to say, from the coach standpoint, are you coaching hockey then?
8-year-olds. Thank you very much.
I love it.
I'm a hockey coach of my son's youth hockey team. So yes, we're learning our edges right now.
I feel like that could help you a little bit with the clinic too. Just from the teaching angle.
I love it. I actually ran a girls hockey school for about 10, 12 years. Every summer when I was playing, and at the time there weren't a lot of girl clinics. I'd host 2-3 weeks during the summer, at different locations. And I love it. It is a different angle when you're playing. Sometimes you just do things automatically. You don't understand how you're able to, you know, cross over as an example, but when you coach, you have to break it down and be very verbal with it. And it forces you to really understand the game in a different way. So yeah, I love coaching. Fun to get back to the game when I can.
And one of the cool parts is you grew up in California. So you're coming back here to be a part of this here in SoCal, a place that's very familiar to you. We were just chatting before we jumped on, you know, your first game. It was a Kings game, of course. That was before the Ducks. But thinking back to that, you remember when the Ducks, you know, became a team.
Oh yeah. No, I was an LA kid. The Kings were the only team when I started playing hockey. It was the Wayne Gretzky era when he came out. But then, you know, the Mighty Ducks, you know, the movie came out. Of course, every kid that played hockey, like, was obsessed. And I was telling you, I got considered to be one of the backup skaters in that. They were trying to round up some local Los Angeles kids for that movie. And it's funny now, however many years ago, I'm showing that movie to my kids, but yeah, that was a big deal when the Ducks came and you know, you had two professional hockey teams in Southern California. That was pretty revolutionary. There weren't a lot of players in general. It's actually, ironically, it's how I found hockey. My dad is from the East Coast, played hockey growing up, went to a local rink, in Kanaio Valley. I grew up playing hockey in Pasadena. But he went, our first year of hockey was in Kanaio, and there weren't enough kids for the Mite team. So the guy signing up, my brother, who's a year younger than me, was like, you know, to my dad, do you have any other kids? And he's like, I got a couple girls at home. He's like, hey, we'll give, sign all three of them up. We'll give you a family discount. Well, it's funny, back in the day, there wasn't a lot of hockey, and that's part of the reason I found hockey. But it's great to see how it's flourished in, you know, the years since.
Was it difficult to play a sport as a kid that other girls weren't playing?
Yeah, you know, my sister played for 2 years, and then I actually became the only girl in the whole state for my age division. Wow. There was one girl older than me. Her name is Brooke White. I remember because I skated with her dad in Van Nuys, for those that know the old Van Nuys clinic. But I was the only one on my team, in my league, in the state. And I traveled to Colorado during Thanksgiving. There was always this annual tournament. And there was a girl on the other team, one of the other teams. Her name was Brandy Kearns. And so it was like, it's crazy thinking back now that there's, you know, the Lady Ducks, there's these girls programs across the state and across the country. But yeah, back in the day, I was the only one. Thankfully, my team, my brother was on my team with me. The guys on my team are always super supportive and helpful. But, you know, I did get cut from a team when I was 9 because I was a girl. I got called names, and parents would even call me names. I mean, it was crazy. So I did face that kind of like gender adversity as a young person. But in some ways it shaped me. It helped me become stronger and, you know, choose to play hockey. I really had to love the game to play. It made me a better person at the end of the day because I had that adversity. Not that I would wish that on kids, but looking back now, it was, it helped me get to where, I mean, I made the national team at 15. I was like focused. I wanted to beat the boys when I was out there and that helped me. Kind of focus each and every time I stepped on the ice.
In talking about then your career, you went on the national team, the Olympics, you went to Harvard, you were a captain. I mean, your resume is incredible in hockey and then obviously outside of hockey too. We'll get to that. But the way that your hockey career developed, was it always a goal to go on, make the national team, you know, climb the levels of it?
Well, it's interesting. I remember we had it in Pasadena. We had, I was a Might Be or something. Mm-hmm. And Marty McSorley showed up to my, I don't know if you remember that guy from back in the day. He played for the Kings. But he showed up and gave me his hockey stick and like said hello to me. Mm-hmm. And suddenly became my hero.
Oh.
And I remember that now, or when I became, you know, an Olympian, just take 2 seconds to say hello to someone. You have no idea the kind of impact that it has. I used to walk around with a card of the 1980 men's hockey team in my wallet. I showed up to career day in the second grade in my hockey equipment. When asked who was I couldn't give them a name. There was no one that looked like me, I guess is the point. I loved hockey and I looked up and aspired to be, you know, play in the NHL or be like Marty or play for the men's 80 team, not recognizing like that wasn't really a path. But I still loved it. I still was going to play. My family was super supportive. And when women's hockey was announced that it was going to be in the Olympics, I was 12 years old. Mm-hmm. Suddenly that was my goal. I mean, that was like, I had a Wheaties box with the Olympic rings on my wall. I still had never seen women play though. You know,
yeah.
I still didn't know what that looked like, but it was still a goal. I'm like, I'm going to play in the Olympics one day. And I went away to prep school. When I was 14 and suddenly I saw girls playing and I was like, whoa, but I still didn't realize I was pretty good and that I could make the national team. It was still just this pipe dream. So when I finally did, you know, naturally I wanted to play in college and found Harvard and so I didn't always know I wanted to play Olympic hockey and play on Olympic teams and win a gold medal and win an NCAA trophy or any of that. It was more, I just wanted to play hockey. Mm-hmm. I just loved the game as a kid. And when I, you know, the whole expression, if you can see it, you can be it. When I could see it, that's who I wanted to be. So, but it took a while because I grew up obviously in an era when girls didn't really play.
Mm-hmm. When you look back on it, you know, you were a part of history, but in the moment, you don't know that you're necessarily making history maybe because you're so focused on the game and everything that's at stake. When you've been able to reflect on it, you know, what does that mean to you?
Yeah. At the time you're just playing,
yeah.
You know, it's funny. You're just a hockey player. You're just a teammate. Of course, when you put, especially Team USA, when you put that jersey on, I mean, you get chills. It's mm-hmm. the first time I wore it. I took 1,000 pictures of myself and I was like, this is the best thing ever.
As you should.
you know, looking back now, it's crazy. We, the 98 team, we won that historic gold medal, first ever women's hockey team. I was the youngest player on that team. We just had our 25th reunion and it's like, whoa, what did we do? That's crazy. We opened the world's eyes to women's hockey. I think that was the first time we had primetime coverage. Obviously winning put us on the Wheaties box. It put us on David Letterman and, you know, the world, I think for the first time, a lot of the world was like, oh, wow, are those women playing? Mm-hmm. That I think opened the doors to the NCAA, you know, committing to us as a full NCAA sport. Clearly there's a pro league now. I mean, the game has evolved so much, but when you're playing, you're not really trying to make history. You're just in some ways playing, but it's always good. Every, you know, I remember towards my fourth Olympics, I would pause a little bit more just to soak it in. Cause I recognize one, it's fleeting, and two, it's bigger than yourself. And you know, and you realize that, I think, when you come home and there's parades or there's those little kids that look up to you and you're, you know, little boys and little girls, you know, you're making an impact in a much, much broader way than hockey. Mm-hmm. That's why I always love, you know, the year, the months after coming back from an Olympic Games. It's the things that you're not trying to do. It's just sort of a positive repercussion mm-hmm. of playing. So yeah, I look back now and, you know, I've been retired for a bit. I miss it for sure. But it's fun that I know that myself and others that were part of those earlier teams, you know, we were pioneers. We led the way. We didn't, mm-hmm. we weren't trying to do it to your question. We were just having fun playing hockey. But yeah, something to tell my kids now.
Do you have the Wheaties box to show them?
So it's funny. My whole team was on the box. 5 of us were left out. You know, this whole NIL era,
yeah.
like we weren't going to get paid, but you know, I just wanted my face on the box. Mm-hmm. So they left 5 of us off. So I still have the box with my teammates as a friendly reminder of this new NIL era. I'm like, I didn't even get to be on the box, but you know what I do have? I still have the game puck from the 98 Olympics.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. That was right at the end of the game. We just won, mm-hmm. upset Canada. And I saw the puck sitting on the ice and I sprinted down. I picked it up, put it in my hockey pants. And then I gave it to my dad, actually, who couldn't make those Olympics. Aww. And yeah, so that's kind of fun. So I look at that every once in a while, or my jerseys. But
yeah,
most of my stuff is in boxes.
I was wondering, you know, the medals, the rings, all of that. You like to keep it boxed up.
It's more of, I love and I appreciate and I remember, mm-hmm. but I'm very much like, what am I going to do next? How am I going to, you know, be in the now versus the past? So I love going to, you know, I love sharing my stories and mm-hmm. I love reflecting on the success and, you know, and the hardships and the lessons. But there's honestly not enough wall space. I have so much stuff. I put, you know, I have a couple of things you can see in the background.
Yeah,
but
that makes sense. Yeah, there's always so much you can hang up without it being too cluttered. But you're talking about just your personality. What's next? You know, and that kind of has led you, that entrepreneurial spirit that you have. Sports Innovation Lab. Where did the idea for that begin?
Yeah, so I started Sports Innovation Lab about 8 years ago. I was CEO for 7 years. I actually left about a year ago as CEO. I'm still chair of the board, but we are a data company. What I realized, I got elected to the International Olympic Committee. I was elected to the US Olympic and Paralympic Committee boards. I was sitting in these very high level board positions, recognizing again 8-9 years ago that technology was changing the fan. Data wasn't a part of the ecosystem, just like the evolution of sports was changing very rapidly. And there weren't many essentially consulting firms or data firms that really understood that consumer, that fan, from a commercial perspective. So rather than just, you know, kind of be happy with status quo, I wanted to build a company that could help the teams, the leagues, the brands, the media partners understand that future consumer with data, and then build innovative strategies to help them capture those fans. And so we're really a data play that helps you know, now everyone's saying data, but 4, 5, 6 years ago, no one was, which is insane. Mm-hmm. It's just to help the sports industry be a better version of itself. It's what I was as an athlete. I was always trying to get better. And I thought, let me build a way that the industry can understand their fan and help them, serve them, make them happier. And then it drives revenue and your fans are happier and they come back. And then, you know, the whole world goes around. So, yeah, it's fun. I'm an entrepreneur at my heart. I think most athletes are, to be honest. You're managing your own career. You know, no one's telling you when to get up, and you have to figure it out on your own. You got to assemble a team. You got to work within a team. You got to find resources around you to make you better. There's some structure, but a lot of it is on you to do. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I like being an entrepreneur. I'm cooking up a couple new things as we speak. So it's fun. It's fun to build stuff.
That's exciting for the future. Probably nothing that you want to share yet. Just keeping it.
Not yet.
Okay. You've gotten to work with a lot of different brands and leagues with Sports Innovation Lab. I was taking a look at the website, just so many different areas of sports that you've gotten to work with. How has that kind of shaped? I know you have the interest of just helping women's sports in general, but seeing how different leagues work, how has that helped the direction of how you want to help women's sports?
Yeah, maybe four years ago, we published, if you look up the Fan Project, my company is a data company. Mm-hmm. And rather than just help everyone, what I realized is there wasn't a ton of investment in the women's space. Again, this is 4 years ago. But there's a huge untapped market. So used our resources to pull data of fans to show there's a lot of pent up demand in this space. Mm-hmm. And this year you're seeing it. You're seeing the Caitlin Clark effect. You're seeing, you know, Wembley Stadium sell out. You're seeing the NWSL at all time record highs and the WNBA. And you're looking at the PWHL numbers. I mean, in general, the market's emerging. So I, about 4 or 5 years ago, started writing research reports to show the business case for women's sports, and not just that there's a market, but how to build that market. So we've helped a number of different leagues, teams, both on the men's and women's side. And I'm just passionate about the women's game because I think, you know, being a former female athlete myself, I saw fans, they wanted more and there wasn't a way to do it. I mean, and part of that is just an investment. So working with owners and leagues, we can help them better understand where to put their investment dollars or brands, right? If they're trying to pick different leagues to work with, we're trying to show that there's a return on investment on the women's game. So it's just being more analytical to your approach to the market than, oh, that's how it's always been done, or this is an easy investment. It's really trying to bring more rigor to the decision makers of the sports ecosystem.
On the end of where some of those leagues are at now, in this era that we're seeing of women's sports, how much it's grown and how much the ceiling is so high for it right now. And when you think about where it's come from to now, how proud are you of the growth and then just looking ahead to everything that's to come?
Yeah, it's in the last 10 years, I'd say. I mean, I think Title IX in the US market helped immensely because it gave girls and women the opportunity. And that's not Title IX is not a sports act, it's an educational act. If you believe that sports educates our children and our collegiate children in this case, that was the sort of impetus for Title IX. But I think what it did is provided scholarships and educational opportunities for girls and women, which, you know, again, I was on the board of the US Olympic and Paralympic Committee. That's the secret weapon of the U.S. winning the medal count. You know, we were 50% women in Paris for the first time ever in terms of participation in the Olympics this summer. And the U.S. women like would win the medal count, like just alone. They'd be up there. Mm-hmm. Title IX, I think, is, and there's a ton of international. I think half the scholarships actually go to international students. Mm. The idea that you get 4 years of both education and training has immensely helped women's sports. I think now what you're seeing on top of just the success of the Olympics and the commercial side of that is these pro leagues are emerging. both here in the US and particularly in Europe, where now league owners can make money. Mm-hmm. And that's like, it's encouraging because you're getting more than just the charity case for women's sports. You're getting like real sophisticated investors putting capital to work in the same way that men's teams and leagues have taken decades to build the infrastructure and the fandom. So what's exciting is technology can accelerate all that. You have a market in the women's game with the right investment and with the help of technology to connect the fan to the game, you can speed up sort of women's sports catching up to men's sports. Now it's going to take a while. Believe me, we're not there yet. Mm-hmm. The brands are woefully underspending. Media isn't near what the men's side of the market is. So it's early, mm-hmm. but I liken it to like a startup versus, you know, you do want to invest in a high growth startup. Yes, there's a little more risk, but there's a lot of reward. Or the S&P 500, where, you know, it's kind of where men's sports is. It's going to continue to grow. You're going to get your returns, but and it's more steady. But to me, it's not as exciting. And I think they're both fun. I love working in sports in general. But women's is more that high risk, high reward kind of opportunity right now.
In talking about working in sports, we were talking before, you mentioned your time with the Rangers last year, working on the team side, being a part of...
You're gonna raise that or not? I don't know.
It's okay. Our fans they love hockey. They want to hear anything NHL too or anything hockey. So, what was that like? Just working with an NHL team and seeing a different perspective.
Yeah, it was fun. I was a advisor to the GM and president, Chris Drury. We won the President's Cup, so we had the best, you know, record in the league. That was fun. I helped scouting all through the ranks from the pros to the amateurs. I followed a lot of our draft picks that were playing the collegiate system and looked at free agents. So I was very much across the organization. Just fun. Again, I've spent most of my career, on the business side of sports post playing days. You know, like I said, I've done youth coaching, but I haven't had the opportunity to really unpeel a professional team from that. So it was a great experience. I had a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got close. Freaking Panthers showed up at the end there. But it's hard to win a cup. I mean, you could have all the ingredients. That's why it's, you know, it's, the odds are not in your favor just to begin with. Mm-hmm. And then all the elements from drafting the right players to developing those players to, you know, finding the right staff that can put them together and assemble them and, you know, the trades that you have to make to then actually go executing and playing. And it's not just hockey anymore. It's your strength and conditioning. It's your, you know, it's your mental game. It's all these other elements. And I mean, that's what I did as an athlete. I get that piece of it, but it was exciting to see. And again, the Ducks, I'm sure every team is the same way. There's just so much that goes into putting the right team together to get hopefully closer to the finish line. Everyone's trying to figure it out. It's not, just put the team out. There's so many elements in building the right team, the right culture, the right strategy. You have to get all those pieces right. You know, if you have one piece off and the other, you know, the opponent you're playing against, I mean, it's tricky. So I had a great time, working with the Rangers and, we got close, but. But that's sports.
It is. It's sometimes the way it goes. I also wanted to talk about your Hockey Hall of Fame induction 2015. I mean, looking back to that now, and then also, I mean, you just mentioned you were back there for the induction ceremony recently. Getting to meet with all those people, see, you know, familiar faces, new faces. What is that like getting to, you know, share that community?
It's a very special community. I was the second American woman, the fourth woman in the hall back in 2015. So Angela James and Cammy Granato were the two women. They were inducted in 2010, the first two women ever. So I got in 2015. It's been 9 years since another American got in, but both Chrissy Wendell and Natalie Darwitz got in this year. So I went back. But it is a tight-knit community, not just on the women's side, just across the board. You become friends with all the members. Mm-hmm. It's almost like you know, when you can, I try to make it back every year to Toronto. great staff that operates that that whole weekend. And yeah, it's again, it wasn't something I grew up thinking, oh, I'm going to get into the Hall of Fame or I want to be in the Hall of Fame. It didn't even cross my mind. And I tell you, when I got that call, you can get in 3 years after you retire. And I got the call 3 years after I retired. I mean, I got into my first year that I was eligible. I wasn't even on my mind. Right. And so you can almost hear the recording. I'm like, what? but such a, you know, huge honor to be a part of it. I think it's great that the Hall is recognizing the women's game now, in the way that it is, and slowly integrating us into not just the ceremony, but the charity game that we do. And, it's crazy. It's so hard to get in there. I mean, there's so many limited, it's just limited. And you look at the classes that have come before you and come after you and you're like, wow, that guy was great or she was great. And, just a fun weekend. And, again, there's a ton more athletes I would want to get in, but just, there's no spots. Like it's very selective, both from the builder category to the player category. So yeah, huge honor that I'm a part of that. And, as I mentioned before, I think I'm the only Californian. You can verify this.
We're going to have to, we'll have to figure it out.
The only California born player.
Okay.
That is in the Hall of Fame currently. So that's my claim to fame.
We can, we can check with Phil Pritchard because he's a friend of Duckstream. And I think he's got all the knowledge of the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Get some statistician that can look that up. And I was Simi Valley until, I grew up there. I played in Pasadena. Mm-hmm. So I'm legit. I played my hockey for the Maple Leafs. State championship might be 1989.
It's just so awesome that it's full circle bringing you back here for this weekend. Looking forward to having you here in Southern California with us, Angela. And it's been awesome getting to chat with you today about your journey. Looking forward to chatting a bit more on Friday, but thanks for joining us.
Yeah. Come to the game, come to the clinic. Thanks for having me. Go Ducks.
This is an Anaheim Ducks original production on DuckStream.